Hey, welcome to Stone Cold Stros, episode 17 of season 2. I'm Brandon Strange. I'm joined by Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. Read Charlie's column weekly on sportsmap.com and follow him on X at Polillo. Read Josh's work daily on sportsmap.com and follow him on X at Josh Jordan 975. Astros drop 4 of their last 6. Seattle going 7-3 in that same time period, stretching their lead in the division to 7.5 games. Charlie, you wrote on SportsMap last week about how important that twin series was for the Astros because there was a potential fighting for a wild card spot. Now there's a groundswell of concern even more so because over their last 160 games, and I guess you can go back as far back, 180 some have, this team has just been a 500 team. Even with a few roster tweaks between seasons, this is becoming a large enough sample size now to where you can really kind of bring into focus what this team is and isn't. I think it was Ben DuBose who drew the comparison to the Golden State Warriors, a team that has at times looked like their old self, but is really just more of a shell of the team that was. How concerned are you guys now that this is just a zombie Astros team of the one that we've covered over the previous 6 seasons?
I am going to turn to the great golfer philosopher Ty Webb, who, if asked to describe the Astros, would say, you're not good. Right, 60 games into the season does mean a tick over 100 to go as they start the St. Louis series, but you are what your record says you are ultimately, and at 26 and 34, the Astros have a losing record at home, a losing record on the road, a losing record during the day, a losing record at night, a losing record versus right-handed starters, a losing record versus left-handed starters. It's not a good team. The patient is in serious condition. One could argue critical, not yet terminal, but dropping that series to the Twins, right? If you look at the two-front war you can fight to get in the playoffs, well, the Astros start the new week now 7.5 games behind the Mariners and 7.5 games behind the Twins for the third wildcard spot, right? The Astros need a telescope to see the Orioles, who lead the wildcard race. Kansas City, a lot of people are going to wait for the bubble to burst on the Royals and for them to crash and burn. But the Astros are 9.5 games behind the Royals and 7.5 games out of the third spot. And then you have all the riffraff teams the Astros are behind, the Rangers and the Red Sox and the Rays and almost everyone that isn't complete garbage, White Sox, Angels. Right? The Astros are multiple games behind the Tigers. So at this point, the outlook is bleak. The saving grace of opportunity is that they now play 5 consecutive series that at this point are against teams that do not have a winning record. Then they play 3 against the Orioles, and then they play 3 more series against teams currently 500 or worse. So they need to start stacking the wins, winning series after series after series, because a game here, 2 out of 3 there, 4 out of 6 there, it's not enough. Now, the Astros need a stretch where they go 14-6 or 21-9. 26-34 is enough body of work until or unless they reprove otherwise. Forget about this team being a great team anymore that some people were clinging to the fantasy of. It's not a good team, but there are still some core components. You know, they need the tumblers to click in as you pull the one-arm bandit, but the clock is ticking, right? 60 games in is not early anymore.
Dana Brown always talks about how they can reel off 10 in a row or, you know, get on some kind of hot streak or something like that. That's usually his go-to phrase. Oh, this team's going to reel off 9 or 10 in a row a few different times this season. That's always kind of his go-to thing. I just don't see how they do it. They're so inconsistent. And even the starting pitching's looked really good lately, but then the bullpen lets you down or you can't come up with a big hit when it matters. It's just, it's always something with these guys. It just feels like they're snake bitten this year. I don't see how they're going to pull out of it. I mean, they haven't been over 500 all year. And when you look at the numbers and you watch them play, it makes sense. This is no surprise at what's happening. If you're watching the games, they fail to get it done. When one guy gets hot, another guy gets totally cold. And you've seen Pena. I brought it up earlier after umpires were calling some sliders a little off the plate on him for strikes. And now he's pressing again, and he's chasing those pitches. Altuve had a terrible month of May. Bregman's finally getting hot, but Altuve's not doing much. We know Yordan, what, do you have 2 homers in the month of May? Maybe he's starting to get going. It's just you don't have enough guys playing well at the same time. And the other thing I thought of too, is it too much to ask for Jake Meyers and Chaz McCormick to be good at the same time? Because it just seems like it never happens. When Chaz is good, Jake isn't good. Now that Jake's playing well this year, Chaz just isn't finding it. So that's something I'm looking at too. And with Loperfido down in the minors, one thing I was looking at, they play him at center field one day, and then they'll play him at first base the next day. Then he's in center field the next day, and then he's at first place the next day. You need to get him as much experience at first base as possible, in my opinion. So maybe have him play the outfield once a week instead of every other day. Let's get him as many reps as possible at first base. And it concerns me with Abreu hitting the home run, and maybe he's going to continue to go 1-for-4, 1-for-5, 1-for-4, kind of like he did in the minor leagues down in Florida. I'm afraid they're just going to keep playing him if he's doing that and he's hitting around 200. So that hope of Loperfido maybe coming in to save you, I don't know if that's going to happen.
Brandon, you invoked a couple of weeks ago, hope is not a plan. The Astros are about to the point where it's hope. There's no expectation, or shouldn't be, that this team can play 650 baseball over 2 months. But in a short stretch where you can at least finally get close to and eventually to 500, those things happen. The Colorado Rockies are trash. They had a 7-game winning streak 3-4 weeks ago. Right? Within 162 games, crazy things happen. But if Dana Brown is going to tiptoe toward delusional that the Astros inevitably are going to go 23-5 in a stretch, well, you know, what goes up often comes down. They're also capable of losing 6 out of 8 right after that, or 8 out of 11, and then you undo some of what you did during the surge. This team now to win 87 games is going to have to play the ball that, if you played it over a full season, would win more than 95 games. This team wasn't close to a 95-win ball club last year. It's not close to a 95-win ball club this year. So if you're an Astros fan, you still have cause to keep hope alive, because football doesn't start for another 3 months. But to be thinking it's inevitable, the Astros are going to be a tsunami that again washes over the American League West, because that's just what they do. You're living in the past, man. Past is not always prologue.
You talk about Joey Loperfido and it being a concern. You know, you need to get him more reps at first base. I would argue that's only if you plan to fix first base. And it doesn't really seem that the Astros are interested in fixing first base per se, as much as they are squeezing every ounce of blood that's left in the stone that is Jose Abreu. And I was reading Chandler Rome going back and forth with guys on Twitter who were asking about the first base situation. And they were kind of parroting some of the stuff that Dana Brown said about how there's going to be a platoon situation and guys have to earn their spot here. But then Abreu gets put right back in the lineup. And they were asking him, like, what happened to that? And Rome said, Abreu's going to get most of the reps. That's just what it is. And you're seeing now that John Singleton's not getting regular time at first. Well, what's his average done? He's gone downhill. You know, we talk about things regressing to the mean, but we also know, too, he had done better with regular time. He's not going to see that regular time anymore. You know, Jose Abreu, outside of a gopher ball that he was able to get a hold of on a day in which there were a lot of meatballs that were just being grooved down the middle, in which Yordan was able to hit a couple. But I also am concerned it's not just the fans living in the past. Charlie, is it possible this front office is still living in the past with the guys that are on this roster and just being so stubborn and just bullish on the guys that they already have instead of making lineup moves, making roster moves that might be conducive to more success?
Well, Abreu is the microcosm of the hope versus expectation, because unless management is stupid, you know, if they're hoping Abreu or expecting Abreu to get to the back of his baseball card, unless they're talking about the line 2023, they're nuts at this point. I mean, granted, since rejoining the ball club, he has surged to 116, so he's like within a 3-hit game of my weight. His would take a lot of heavy lifting. Right. Singleton is Singleton. Law of diminishing returns was likely. Now, Loperfido is 5-for-24 since going to AAA, but that's a small sample size. He had 333 here in a larger sample size. Strikeouts be damned. Of course, he should be their primary first baseman, but they still are sunk $30 million into Abreu. So they're going to try to get a drop, you know, forget about any sort of flow of blood from that stone. What in part is exasperating is the roster is not awful, right? They lead the American League in batting average, separate from timely hitting, right? To wit, Yordan, two home runs, four RBI the entire month of May. What Aaron Judge did Friday night, two home runs, four runs batted in, right? Yordan can only badly outproduce Judge in the playoffs if he's in the playoffs. And the Astros are climbing a steep mountain at this point. But Yordan, a two home run game, day one of June. All right, the calendar is turned. Here come the Astros. And not that anyone is going to come through most of the time, but again, the microcosm thing. Bases loaded spot in the seventh inning with Abreu standing on third because of spotted in pinch run form foolishly. And Yordan hits a lazy fly ball to end the inning. Yordan Alvarez this season now with runners in scoring position, head of the St. Louis series, 8-for-50. 160 batting average for Yordan with runners in scoring position. Right, this is the guy who's supposed to be your foremost masher. Right, Kyle Tucker is obviously their best player so far this season, but on pedigree, Yordan Alvarez is their big slugger, and Yordan's been more 98-pound weakling than big slugger to this point in the season. Now he's 27 years old, not Abreu's 37 years old, so can Yordan have a monster month? A couple of years ago in June, he went crazy. The 1200-something OPS, right? Alex Bregman, a bona fide, really good week with four home runs in six games, four two-hit games in the six games, a 10-for-24 week. But let's note, the last time Bregman had a six-game hitting streak, which is what he closed this week with, he then immediately went 4-for-40. So baseball is the ultimate body of work game because there's more to the body, right? 162 games, over six games or eight games or 10 games. You do it in the playoffs, Jeremy Pena a couple of years ago, that's the stuff of legend and can help teams win championships. But six games, eight games, 10 games, over 162, those are blips on the radar, right? 16 games, 17 games of one baseball season equal one game in the NFL, right? You win one game in the NFL that you're not supposed to win, or the offense that's not real good scores 31 points. Doesn't mean your offense is really good and your team has arrived. It means that on any given Sunday, or I guess in the NFL now, Saturday or Monday or Thursday or Friday after Thanksgiving, right? Stuff can happen in the small picture. It's about the big picture. And the Astros still have some pieces of the puzzle that you think they should be fitting better than this. But 7.5 games in arrears in both the division with all that Mariners great pitching and payroll flexibility if their tightwad owners decide, let's go get a real bat or two between now and the deadline. And behind so many teams in the wild card race, you know, the definite answer at this point to are the Astros likely to make the playoffs is no. But they're not yet to the realm of it's impossible or it would be a miracle. And I understand that as fans, for many podcasters, media, just in rational discussion, it's absolutely viable now to suggest, hey, you know, sell some of what you can sell now. If you can get an extra 6 weeks return by trading Bregman in early June as opposed to at the deadline in July that the team's getting him, gets an extra 6 weeks out of him, you can maybe get a little bit better prospect. It's not going to happen because the Astros, they're buried, but they're not dead and buried. And you look at the schedule, it's the All-Star break. If they lose more ground between now and the All-Star break, then feel free to close the lid. But they get to the break. Out of the break, they play three games at Seattle. And I think that's where the rubber hits the road because then you're at July 21st, I believe it is, at the end of that series. And if you're 8, 9, 10 games out at that point, you know, you just lost a chance to gain ground on Seattle, which has wrapped up the season series on you already. Then it's safe to say it's over. And trade what you can before the deadline, which is a little early this year, the 29th, I think it is, rather than the 31st. But the Astros are not going to pull the plug now, and I submit they should not, because it's not a million-to-one shot that they can creep back into this thing. But the Mariners, stretching it out to seven games over 500, hey, because I still think their better chance to get into the playoffs is to win the division than to reel in all the teams they have to for the wild card. But that shot's diminishing seemingly weekly.
Yeah, and it's easy to pile on, you know, Abreu and a lot of these other guys. But as good as, you know, Kyle Tucker's been this year, we knew how big that Mariner series was and how big this Twin series was. Last seven games, he's hitting 125. Last 15 games, Tucker's hitting 189. So, you know, as good as he's been, he's been struggling lately. And I found it interesting when Chandler Rome was asking about, would it be a platoon at first base with Abreu? You know, how's that playing time going to shake out? He brought up in his piece that all three of Abreu's hits came after a day off. So right. I think he was like, is that going to be the idea to try and keep him fresh so he performs better? But Espada seemed to kind of shrug it off and just be like, no, I like what I'm seeing, and that's not going to factor in it at all. So I'm just, and it goes back to the postseason. Chandler Rome talked about in his column too, how Abreu was good in the postseason because you have those extra days off in the playoffs and older player allowed to be fresh. Notice they finally gave Altuve a day off on Sunday as well. So, you know, we see it on social media, and I've been pretty positive about Joe Espada, but I'm starting to, the shine's wearing off a little bit for me. There's some things here where and then again, it's what we kind of talked about, Brandon, how many of these decisions are truly his, and how many of them is it he's got his marching orders from Dana Brown and Bagwell or whatever. I'm not sure, but I know he caught a lot of heat for, you know, putting Presley in that game. And a lot of people said, well, hey, I mean, he's one of your best guys. He's got to get the job done. But Espada's catching it, man. On those Twitter streets, Astros Twitter, he's hearing it. I kind of worry about it if he's going to be the answer long term.
Yeah, well, when you're the manager, right, it comes with life in the big time. And when you're 26 and 34, and that's the entirety of your resume, but that the Astros' plight foremost goes on Joe Espada's doorstep is ridiculous. Some people complain about all the lineup movement. Well, those same people would complain, why aren't you trying something? If you'd be going with a staid lineup where the offense has been way too feast or famine, even so some of the surface statistics, a number of them, you know, top five in the American League. First time all season, hey, Yiner Diaz, you know, after doing a too damn good Martin Maldonado impression at the plate for about 6 weeks, you sit 2 days in a row for the first time this season. Victor Caratini, if he's going to out-hit Yiner, well, he needs to play more than Yiner. At least that has to be an even job share as opposed to two out of three, which isn't just dumping Yiner as your long-term hope at the position, but it's dire straits time, right, for the Astros, and it needs to be straight-up meritocracy. Clearly not the case at first base. Maybe the start of a little bit of a turn there at catcher. And then, as Josh alluded to, you know, when it's going great, it seems like everybody gets hot at once, but there's going to be vacillation, right? Kyle Tucker wasn't going to go crazy the entire season. So he's 5 for his last 39, as Jeremy Pena is 5 for his last 37, dipping below 300. Pena is back to he never walks mode. So for a guy batting 300, his on base percentage, frankly, is not very good. So, you know, what Bregman picks up, Pena has dropped off, and you add it all up, and that's how you're an average team, or in this case, a below average team. Ryan Presley, you know, what's his trade value? I mean, it's almost where get hurt, not terribly, but he's easily on pace to get to 50 appearances. And that guarantees him $14 million for next season, an option I'm pretty sure he'd be exercising. The Ryan Presley market would not be robust about now, but with a good month, you know, can they move him to at least get off the salary for next year to give them some more flexibility in the offseason? But again, I still think we're a month plus out from getting down to those real nitty-gritty calls. Are we going to pull the plug on the patient? They have their opportunity with the schedule. Are they good enough to make enough of it? Past performance this season suggests not, but the 2017 Astros, when I break out from time to time, the 2017 Astros started unbelievably 42-16. Well, then for 2.5 months, they were the essence of mediocrity, 37-37, right? 162 games. There's going to be ebb and flow. Sometimes it's a big portion of the schedule. And then the Astros traded for Verlander, surged to a 22-8 finish, and went on to ultimate glory and so forth. So 26-34 is not horrifically uncharacteristic of a team that winds up winning 85 games. But it's a near impossibility for a team to do that and win 92, 93 games. So either Seattle, which is now up to a 90-win pace, flattens out, and maybe 86, 87 can win this division this year, or the wild card bar is going to have to be lower than it was last year when it took 90 games to get into the American League. The Astros are absolutely unlikely to get to 90.
Well, in regards to the 2017 comparison, I don't think Prime Correa or George Springer are walking through that door this season, as much as I hate to say that. We talk about this Abreu being this microcosm. Is Presley in that same thing too, where it's just more of a hope than a plan? You talk about meritocracy and playing guys. He's carrying a 5.24 ERA with a whip of 1.61. A meritocracy would not dictate that Ryan Presley should be pitching in leveraged situations. is it time that maybe you flip-flop Brian Abreu and at the very least you flip-flop Brian Abreu and Ryan Pressly?
Couple thoughts on that. One, I think Pressly's talent has diminished. He's 35. You know, is there a psychological component? And well, I'm not the ninth inning guy anymore. I mean, frankly, I think it's cheesy when they play Johnny Cash and dim the lights when he's coming into a tie game in the eighth inning. That's not the save man striding in from the bullpen to shut you down. But when you're a robot managing, your plan is seventh, eighth, ninth, my big three, they're each going to have to get three outs. So, you know, if it's going to be Abreu for one inning, Pressly the other. Now, if you're facing the tougher part of the lineup, say the 2-3-4 hitters are coming up in the seventh inning, okay, then go to Abreu. But if it's 7-8-9 and you've preordained it's one inning for each of them, well, then go to Pressly for the softer part of the lineup because, I mean, it's not like Abreu's been airtight. He sucked his first outing in the Twin Series, but he's way better than Pressly. His stuff is just way better at this point than Pressly. And, you know, Hader quietly has been pretty strong now over the last month. But if you're saying it's nine outs and, you know, we're slicing the pie three ways, then Pressly has to get those three outs. So the question is, would you supplant Pressly with Montero? Are you thinking that Taylor Scott has pitched well enough, long enough that, okay, big guy, now you're going into the seventh, eighth inning in a tie game or a one-run game as opposed to the fifth or sixth inning of a 2-3-run game, you know, Seth Martinez. Pressly has earned a demotion. Who are you going to replace him with? But it would have to be more than just flip-flopping Abreu-Pressly if it's going to be a real demotion because, hey, in a tie game, those are still important outs in the seventh inning.
It's interesting. A lot of the advanced analytics on Pressly indicate maybe he's having some bad luck, that it's not as bad as we think. But I'll say this. The one thing that is obvious to me that's a problem is he's walking more guys this year. He's over three walks per nine innings this season. He hasn't been that high. Well, he was at three walks in 2020. So that's a big deal because he'll lose a guy. He'll get a guy 0-2 and end up walking him. And then that guy comes around and ends up scoring. And we know how easy it is to steal second base these days. So you walk a guy, there's a good chance he's in scoring position pretty quick. And then you hang a curveball or whatever, and you're in trouble. You give up a run. So
that's how they lost Sunday's game, Josh. Right? Yeah. He walks the leadoff guy. The Twins actually gave away an out with the sacrifice. But then Pressly's unable to close it down from there. Leadoff walks score more than 40% of the time. Right? It's just putting bullets in the other guy's gun.
Yep. So that's a big concern for me is, yeah, if this stuff is diminishing a little bit, okay, but we'll stop walking guys. And I know it's easier said than done, but I notice a lot of times it seems that you always have to go to a 3-2 count with Pressly. I feel like it's always gets to 3-2. Maybe try and get a guy on 2-2 to where if you miss, you haven't walked him yet. You have another pitch. So that's something I'd like to see that because that's something I've noticed with him for a couple of years. It's just now 3.2 walks per nine for a guy in high leverage situations. That's going to burn you from time to time, and we're seeing it.
Well, not to mention the fact I saw that hitters are slugging over 600 on his fastball. So we can argue about the shape of his pitch being there and maybe him getting into some bad luck. But batters slugging 600 off of your fastball, that is not bad luck. That is bad results. Again, we can argue about how much control Espada has as far as like, you know, what the expectations are from the front office, but he's not going to buy himself any favor by continuing to do other things that we know are in his control, like pinch hitting or pinch running for certain guys. And I guess that's part of it is when everything goes bad and he's part of everything. But it's really tough to give him the benefit of the doubt when he's not pulling the correct strings, even on more minor things. Do you guys see Espada surviving this season if the Astros miss the postseason? Because Josh, you and I, you know, had that conversation about Joe Espada last week. You posited the possibility that maybe he just becomes a fall guy for the front office. And just if the fans are already against him, is that just an easy box to check in the offseason? Just go, well, we'll get rid of some bad vibes there and maybe create some, I don't know, excitement around a new skip?
There's one man who can answer that question, and he hasn't been heard from very much lately. Of course, yeah. That would be Jim Crane. I was wondering whether you're going, would he survive this season? Meaning within this season, you go back to 2004, and it happened out of nowhere. Astros were a 500 team at the All-Star break. right? With this team, you say, well, if you're going to fire Joe Espada now, who on the staff's a worthy interim? And what's the real change you'd be making there? Alex Cintron, Dave Clark, Gary Pettis? I don't think so. But in 2004, very secretively, whoa, Phil Garner's the new manager of the Astros. Jimmy Williams is out. So, you know, as an executive, probably in most professions, certainly in baseball, you know, you have that break glass in case of emergency list of, geez, if for some reason Joe Espada up and resigned, who would I immediately be calling with interest for the manager's job? Does Jim Crane have a name or two or three, or is Dana Brown charged with having a name or two or three? I think within this season, Espada's safe. But I don't know what Jim Crane's thinking. Right? You can wake up on the wrong side of the bed one morning and say, enough. It's not like you have to pay off a long-term contract with Joe Espada, right? This is not $30 million you'd owe Espada a la Jose Abreu. But while Espada has not distinguished himself, I don't think he's been some sort of train wreck, right? He hasn't hit .215 his last 25 games. Altuve has. Espada's not batting .160 with runners in scoring position. Alvarez is. Espada didn't play like he belonged in the minor leagues the first 2 months of the season. Bregman did. Right? Then you throw in the pitching injuries. So while you're the manager, of course, there's culpability with that. But to me, that's scapegoat 101 if you do it now. But end of season, all bets are off. I will throw water on the idea of Alex Cora. Come on, anyone suggesting that? You really think that's where Jim Crane would go back to? I guess nothing should shock us in this day and age, but that would make a real run at it for me.
Yeah, no, in this front office, Brad Ausmus's name might start coming up again. I could see something like that. That would not shock me at all. And I remember when they were talking about the possibility of Espada, I remember some articles about how Crane kind of likes to make a splash with name guys. Typically, Dusty Baker was a big name guy that he hired as manager. So, you know, people thought that Espada may not be the option because that's typically not what Crane does, is promote from within and not go get a bigger name. So if this doesn't work out this year, then maybe Crane will be like, yeah, I went against my instincts here and it didn't work out. Maybe I need to go get a bigger name in here, a guy these guys can respect. So we'll see. Certainly playing better would help Joe Espada and it would quell a lot of this stuff, but I think it'd be real easy. They want to sell tickets. And if they can just say, blame the manager for it coming into next year, hey, we got a new manager, everything will be fixed. That's kind of an easy thing to do. So it wouldn't surprise me if it crosses Jim Crane's mind.
Charlie, I just want to follow up though. You said it would be scapegoating if they termed him in season. If they termed him in the off season, is that not still scapegoating?
Oh, in part, it absolutely would be, but it's a cleaner transition point where you're just turning the page and who knows what lies ahead in the personnel department, right? Bregman prominently is a free agent, but trade deadline if they are sellers. What's the composition of the roster and the state of the system? Are they entering a rebuilding phase, which they'd certainly call reloading phase? Does that impact the kind of manager you'd want to bring in? I mentioned Cora because he's up. Skip Schumacher, National League manager the last year, last season with the Marlins. They voided his option year so he can escape Miami after this season if he wants to. All right, what will the Astros prioritize stylistically? Age. You can't hire a taskmaster, right? This isn't the 1970s where go get Billy Martin or Dick Williams. You can Google him, young people. We're a cart before the horse, unless you think that this horse is dead, in which case have at it.
You mentioned the injuries to the staff as part of the things that are out of Joe Espada's control. Performance is one thing. Injuries are another. They're an unfortunate part of sports. Astros are really going through it right now. And it seems like they've been going through it for a while now. And so I went back and I was looking, and this is an abbreviated recap because it would be a 5-minute preamble here. But Luis Garcia, TJ surgery, May of 2023. McCullers, who had come back for maybe, eight starts and a couple of playoff appearances, ends up going back down with, he has that flexor surgery in June of 2023. Keep in mind, that ended Steven Strasburg's career. This season, Jose Urquidy starts the season off in the IL with a forearm strain. JP France, non-specific shoulder injury. We don't really have any updates on him. JV had that hiccup that put him on the IL early in the season, which we never really knew what that was. He just said it was a hiccup. Christian Javier experiences that stiff neck injury. That was in April. Javier returns for a few games, but his velo is noticeably down. There was also some talk about maybe he got rushed back too soon because he didn't make as many rehab starts as maybe some people thought he should have. Again, all speculation. We have to defer to their team doctors on this. But then Urquidy, who's making his way back from that forearm strain, he goes down during a rehab start. And we just still don't know what the diagnosis of either Urquidy or Javier is at this point. They continue to push back the updates on that. That's part of this frustrating culture of secrecy that surrounds Astros and injuries to players. But what's your concern level for how the Astros are handling rehabilitation with their pitchers?
Well, we're not doctors, but we can play three during this podcast. If you're consuming us during a commute, honk if you're confident that Urquidy and or Javier are going to return and pitch effectively, if at all, this season. Yeah, that's what I thought. Sounds of silence. I didn't want to create chaos on the highways. Give me a little bit of credit. Two thoughts. One, I find it more annoying than anything else, the way the Astros handle this stuff, whether it's more a non-information campaign than a misinformation campaign. If you just don't say what it is when you know what it is, you're not lying to us. You're just withholding the information. Do they think they're flummoxing the competition around the American League West or the AL or over in the National League? They think, geez, we're not sure a month from now which pitcher might show up for the Astros. It's going to influence our entire game planning. So to me, it's just kind of power trippy and silly. In terms of the actual, I really think it's just more we're in an era of epidemic of pitchers blowing out their arms. Right? The Astros laundry list on this is unfortunately long, but look at the Dodgers from Walker Buehler to Clayton Kershaw and Dusty May and Tony Gonsolin. The Rays have an entire rotation of starters who've had Tommy John or internal brace or flexor. It's all over the place. The Braves have lost multiple guys, though Charlie Morton keeps on humming. Another real good start over the weekend from Lord Charles. So, the Astros doing anything wrong medically or in the recovery process, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. McCullers is just not built for this stuff in terms of any durability, the series of injuries that he's had. A little bit of when it rains, it pours. But, I mean, the Padres lost, not for the season, well, we don't think, but both Joe Musgrove and Yu Darvish, 40% of their rotation went on the injured list same day over the weekend. The Orioles lost two guys in their rotation, Tommy John surgery, over the weekend. I just think it's everywhere. But, you know, for us, for Astros fans, it's natural to scrutinize the Astros arms race, which they've lost too many of.
It's certainly a concern, but I wonder if it's you mix the pitch clock with not letting the guys use the sticky stuff anymore. And I think maybe that's kind of increased some of these injuries we see with pitchers. You know, you're having to throw a pitch, you know, whatever, 20 something seconds, where, you know, baseball before that, you would have all kind of breaks with guys stepping off and all kinds of things like that. As a fan, I certainly enjoy the quicker pace game, but you don't like the injuries. And I'm looking at Urquidy here. Dana Brown's, he sounded the most concerned about Urquidy just, you know, based on his interview on the flagship. But it's interesting. We might have seen, if it is Tommy John, we might have seen Urquidy in an Astros uniform for the last time. He's a free agent in 2026. So if he doesn't make it back for any portion of next season, which is possible, that might be it for Urquidy in an Astros uniform. And the Javier thing, it just came to mind that that's the one signing Dana Brown did get done. He talked about Tucker and Bregman and all these other guys, but he did get Christian Javier a contract extension. So you wonder if Jim Crane's going to be looking at him a little side-eyed if they paid him early and he could possibly miss most of the next year and a half, 2 years. It's an unfortunate situation. I love watching the guy pitch, but you notice that with, it's not the first time we've seen his velocity kind of dip down. It goes up and down for him. They blame it on mechanics typically, but obviously, that's not the case here because he's hurt. So you hope the best for those guys. But, you know, to answer your question, Brandon, I don't know what else they can do. They're so secretive that I don't know what they're doing with these guys. It's hard for me to pinpoint the errors they're making. I guess the one thing you brought up, maybe they're bringing them back too soon. But the good news is Hunter Brown looks like what we thought Hunter Brown could be when he came up. He's starting to pitch like that. Was it three or four quality starts in a row he's had lately? Arrigetti looks like he belongs in the big leagues. So I think that's a great sign that you have some really good pitching. It looks like that sinker for Hunter Brown has made a big difference, allowing him to throw inside. It's guys can't just lean over the plate anymore. So hopefully that's something that'll continue, not just a flash in the pan. But it's funny, we get all these great starts from Verlander and Arrigetti and Hunter Brown, and they're still not winning games consistently. So they still got a lot of other stuff to get their arms around here.
Someone asked Chandler Rome a while back. I think we've mentioned it on this podcast before, but it's been a while, so I'll reiterate it. Someone had asked Chandler Rome, is the secrecy of the Astros and their injuries, is that something that is league-wide? And Chandler said that most teams, almost all teams, when they're giving an update on their guys, they'll give an injury in a time frame. And with the Astros, you're lucky to get one. Do you think the secrecy around the injuries is maybe to divert a little bit of that criticism with how guys are handled, you know, maybe by some of the armchair quarterbacks or some of the Twitter doctor experts who see an injury and then they go, oh, well, that injury correlates to this timeline. So maybe if they bring a guy back early and then something happens to them eventually, that it diverts criticism away from the team.
The last point's an interesting thought, but you know, this traces back now across multiple general managers. The field manager is going to get his marching orders on this stuff. Don't talk about that. But I really think overall, it's what's the point? In hockey, there's a long honored tradition, especially in the playoffs, that such and such, he has a lower body injury. Well, that's pretty vague. Well, hockey, if you tell he's got a real bad quad contusion or it's an ankle that the other team can aim at those body parts. The other team's not going to get, oh, it's his elbow, not his shoulder. I just think it's silly. And as I said, power trippy more than anything else. There's no competitive advantage derived from it. And, you know, if anything, it just calls more attention to how you handle it. I mean, this Javier Urquidy stuff, by the time Thursday's announcement of doom, expected announcement of doom comes, it would have been what, a week and a half? Since it was, well, we'll see. We might not be too bad. It's just soreness, this, that, the other. Just get on with it. We're all grown-ups here. Though if you're a minor consuming a Stone Cold Stroh, good for you. Your parents raised you well.
Yeah, it's just frustrating. Charlie's right. It makes us even that much more nervous and talking about it even more when, especially day after day without an update, it's really odd. And whenever you hear second opinion, you know it's bad. So, you know, they didn't like something from the imaging, I guess, from the first opinion. So they're going to look at something else. And I mean, we see this all the time. Usually when there's a second opinion, whether it's football, baseball, whatever sport it is, it's usually not good. So I don't think I'd expect Urquidy really for the rest of the year. And I think we'll be lucky if we see Javier at some point, maybe in 3 months or something like that. I think that would be fortunate from the vibes that we're getting right now.
Yeah, the big story would be, the MRI came out clean. Everything looks great. Well, let's go get a second opinion.
Yeah.
The second opinion is a pretty ominous thing. And I guess it fits the characterization of this Astros season overall to this point.
Let's take a step back and look more macro at it. Charlie, you mentioned there does seem to be an epidemic of injuries that are happening with pitching, but there are arguments that say, oh, well, if you look at this timetable, more guys had TJ during this year or this season, which was before the pitch clock and before the sticky stuff. But it really does seem like a lot of big name pitchers, a lot of important pitchers are not able to answer the bell right now for their teams. Do you think if this continues that MLB does anything to address this? I mean, they've put a lot of stock in trying to shorten up these games because they feel like that's how we're going to get the lay fan. We're going to get them back in with shorter games. I don't know that there's been any correlation or any sort of numbers that show or dictate that these shorter games have led to larger viewerships. In fact, I might argue that the end of the regional sports networks, that has made it harder for fans to watch games. Do you think the league responds in any meaningful way to make adjustments here after they've put their foot down on sticky stuff and after they've drew such a hard line in the sand about games need to be shorter?
In the short term, no. You know, could they turn out to be very penny wise, pound foolish that you're chasing every dollar? And so you're thinking shorten the games, better viewership, better advertising rates, et cetera, et cetera. But geez, we're losing all these pitchers and millions of dollars to injury. aside, the Astros are 15 games behind the Yankees, and Gerrit Cole hasn't thrown a pitch this season. You know, the early indications are there has not been and just an avalanche of injuries above and beyond what they've been in recent years past since the move to the clock, and then further trimming it down from 20 to 18 seconds with runners on base this year. You know, it'll probably be, well, we need 4 or 5 years of data on this. Well, what damage can be done while you're accruing the data? Justin Verlander, who I have no idea if he, you know, if I'd made $400 million and had a great family, I don't know that I'd want to be sitting in a studio analyzing games. But, man, he's smart and thoughtful and expansive. And after one of his starts a few weeks back, he went into some of this stuff. You know, I think a bigger issue is that from when kids are 10, 12 years old, throw the you-know-what out of the ball every time you could throw it. You know, snap off a curveball when you're 11. Work on that slider. You're only 12? Don't worry about it. You almost need the Tommy John starter set and get it out of the way when you're in high school anyway. That's throw so hard, throw so hard. Guys in the minors, throw hard, throw hard, throw hard. Just maximum exertion every pitch. And if you get through 5 innings, that's good, right? The craft of pitching, pacing yourself within a game, diminishing the wear of tear pitch by pitch. You know, how all, you know, which tiles are the bigger ones in the mosaic on all this? I don't know. It's natural for the Players Association to, you know, hue and cry over, see, they're tearing down our arms by their rules changes that we didn't immediately sign off on. But no, I don't think we're going to – pitchers take all the time you want. The genie's out of the bottle, not going back in on that.
Yeah, and there's a reason they push so hard for that stuff. I think it was on Pitching Ninja's account the other day. He put opponents' average against fastballs 93 to 95 miles an hour, 246. Opponents average on fastballs 99 to 100 miles an hour, 177. So the velocity matters, and that's why all these guys are trying as hard as they can to throw as hard as they can, and that's not going to change because proof's in the pudding right there. You guys are hitting under 200 against fastballs close to 100 miles an hour, so that's not going to change. And as far as the league stepping in, Brandon, that you asked, I don't think so. Look at the NFL now. They're basically playing a game every single day of the week now. I think the Texans have like 3 games within 10 days later in the season. I don't see MLB being any different than the NFL. They want to capitalize. They want to make as much money as possible. And some guys are going to get hurt. Oh, well, you got to break some eggs to make an omelet, I guess.
I guess so. And to your point, also how you maximize spin rate, throw as hard as you can. And Charlie, you said it, kids playing earlier, playing less sports. They wanted you to play more than one sport, but now it's more specialized. They want you to play one sport and play it as much as you can. And the way you play on better teams is playing in all these leagues throughout the seasons. I get they're trying to, you know, they may break a few eggs to make an omelet, but stars are the ones that bring eyeballs to games. That's why they cracked down on the load management as hard as they did. But if all of your star pitchers are all sitting because they're all recovering from elbow surgery, I think that degrades the product. And so, you know, you would hope that not just for ratings sake, but for the health of the league would take a really, really hard look at what these rule implementations are doing, not just to abbreviate the games, because again, I don't know that there's been any real concrete evidence that that's going to make the game better. I mean, it's much more watchable. I like knowing that a game's going to be 2.5 hours. That's great because it's not so much of a commitment for my evening. But if the overall quality of the game is less because your star pitchers can't go out there and perform the way they used to, I don't know that your product's better.
Yeah, and I really wonder what can, much less will be done or would be done at kind of the acorn level to influence how they grow into oaks. Because, man, there are decades of Major League Baseball pitchers that we can go back and look. And I don't mean way back to the dead ball era. I'm talking 70s into the 80s where it really started to turn. But, you know, Justin Verlander used to throw 225 innings plus year in, year out. Guys like Roy Halladay, and you go back to Jack Morris, and certainly then you get to the 80s. And before that, starting pitchers who throw 250, 275 innings per year for 8-10 years. It's not like we maxed them out 3-4 years and all their arms were dragging the ground or falling off. Guys who would do it for a decade and pitch on 3 days rest routinely and arms held up for the long haul. And guys pitched well, right? Good pitching with location. It's not just about velocity, right? The art of pitching. And they're not developed to be durable now. And will there be a title change against that? Or is this, for better and worse, how it's going to forever be?
Well, I'm looking at our personal pitch clock here, and that's going to be it for this episode of Stone Cold Stros. If you listen on podcast and you enjoy the show, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating. Charlie, Josh, and I will be back with you next week, but you don't have to wait that long to get your Houston sports fix, because if you subscribe to SportsMap Houston or SportsMap Texans, you're going to see some content trickle out there during the week. Like last week, Josh and I did a little breakdown of the similarities to the Texans wide receiving core to a certain 16-0 football team from 07. So do you want to watch that breakdown? It's up over on the SportsMap Texans channel right now, and got a lot of good feedback. So we appreciate everyone who's already subscribed there. And as far as the Astros go, hope is not a plan, but we're going to have to hope. So fingers crossed. As always, go Stros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.